Hello, listener. Happy New Year and welcome to Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. I'm David Maguire, Creative Director at Radix Communications, and I'm joined by our lead copywriter and CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hello. Are you used to the job title yet?
It's sinking in slowly. Yes, thank you. I might have ideas above my station now, possibly.
Yes.
I feel like I'm running a global multinational.
Well, maybe soon.
Maybe one day.
How was Christmas?
Christmas was lovely. It's my favourite holiday of the year because the office is closed. I don't have to think about work. Can just be with the family. It's really nice.
Oh, fabulous. It was over really, really quick, though, wasn't it?
It was, yes. It was a funny one this year. It was, you know, it was 2 weeks like we have every year. But because it was Wednesday to Wednesday, it felt less. I don't know if you felt the same.
Sure. I mean, I think that it was that bit where I was looking forward to what it normally is, this endless stretch between Christmas and New Year.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hang on, I'm back to work in a couple of days. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're delighted to be back, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Of course. Now, in this episode of the podcast, we're talking about the issue of gender in B2B copywriting, specifically the lack of women quoted in B2B content, the lack of women writing it, and whether we as writers have a responsibility to do something about that. And we'll be talking to Claire Mason of Man Bites Dog about the gender say gap. It's an issue that affects us all, one way or another, so we really want to know what you think. Send us an email or a voice memo to podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. Fiona, if you don't mind, I'd like to start by asking you about your experiences as a woman writing B2B tech content over the last sort of decade plus.
two decades plus, probably. Oh, that plus was carrying a lot of
weight. It was
away,
a
there.
Lot of plus. Plus VAT. See, the Pro Copywriters Survey consistently shows most copywriters are women. And that's certainly something that I see reflected when I go to conferences, when I hold open training sessions. It's mostly women. But in B2B, it feels like it's quite the opposite, right? I mean, our agency writing team is, what, 80% male? And unscientifically, that kind of feels like the sort of split that we see in the agencies that we work with as well. Like we know really brilliant female B2B copywriters in the tech sector, but they are heavily outnumbered. I mean, do you think there's something in particular that's sort of putting women off in this sector?
Well, it's such an interesting question, and I feel like I ought to have answers for you, and I don't know if I do. But it's not the sector that puts women off, I don't think, because if you look at marketing agencies that specialise in B2B tech, there's a lot of women in those agencies. And if you look at technology companies, particularly the big ones, you know, the large, the big software companies, say there's a lot of women at all levels in those organisations.
Sure.
So I don't think it's the sector as a whole that puts women off. But you're absolutely right that, you know, the vast majority of the writers that we see in the sector are men. And, I mean, I'm quite ashamed, really, of the fact that, you know, you're right, 80% of our team here, our writing team here, is male.
But that broadly reflects the applications that we get, though, right?
It does, although I'm going to be really honest on this podcast, because we haven't always gone through recruitment processes, hiring processes, every time we've hired a copywriter. A lot of the time it's people that have come to us and said, you know, I'm interested in writing about B2B tech, or I'm interested in working for you, or they've been recommended to us by somebody, mm-hmm. and we've taken them on without doing like a proper hiring process. I mean, when we were a very small company, we just sort of hired ad hoc. And the team that we've built up has been overwhelmingly male. Now, when, you know, in more recent times, as we've become a bigger organisation, we've like put in proper hiring processes, now to the point where we're doing actual best practice, where we're taking people's names and gender indicators, and, you know, race and sexuality and anything, like indicators like that, off the application, you know, and we're sort of looking blind at those applications. You know, we're sort of discounting gender, but I feel like, you know, in the past, we haven't been using those best practices, and that's perhaps how we've ended up with a team that's so male-dominated.
Sure. I mean, do you feel that there is anything intrinsic about being a writer in B2B tech, where being a woman's a hindrance? I mean, have you found it a problem at all?
Yeah, that's also an interesting question, because I've got nothing to compare it to. Fair. And when I'm going about my job and talking to clients and writing, I don't think, gosh, I'm a woman doing this. What kind of experience is this for me? I don't feel like it's ever hindered me in my career. You don't know this for a fact, and I do sometimes get the impression, perhaps when I walk into a room, if I'm going to do like a messaging workshop or something like that, and most of the people in the room, if not all of the people in the room, are men, I sometimes feel like I've got to work a bit harder to establish credibility. Mm-hmm. And I can sometimes feel that scepticism in the room to begin with, and I do feel like, okay, well, I can see that's what's going on here, and I'm going to have to work quite hard to overcome that. But I do generally manage, so I don't feel that it's been a hindrance to me at all. I can't speak for other women.
Okay, so if it's not a specific problem, except in some small cases, what do you feel is causing the imbalance that we see?
Well, I mean, again, I don't know, but something really struck me when I was sort of thinking about this podcast. And it's about sort of in-house writing teams where these people are being recruited and they're being hired by an agency. Mm-hmm. Or I guess by a client organisation. But generally the writing team will be part of the creative team, so they will report into the creative director ultimately. And then I just remembered I saw something where Pinterest had done a study of, you know, how many creative directors are men and how many creative directors are women. And they found that 89% of creative directors are men. And so perhaps what we're seeing is a hiring bias, and obviously, you know, I've talked about the makeup of our team, and so I haven't got any kind of moral high ground to stand on.
Most of them were hired before me. I hasten to add,
but perhaps we're seeing some kind of hiring bias there. Perhaps male creative directors are hiring in their own image. I mean, people have a sort of unconscious tendency to do that,
to hire people that look like them.
Yes.
Yeah, and do you feel that the situation is changing? Is it any better than it was 5 or 10 years ago?
In terms of in-house teams, well, I mean, we're seeing bigger in-house teams. We're seeing bigger, you know, agencies setting up their own in-house teams of writers because of the way content marketing's been going. But as those teams get bigger, I don't see a larger proportion of women on those teams, no.
The 2018 Pro Copywriters Survey also revealed that copywriting still has a gender pay gap of 25%, and that's only among full-time writers, so the disproportionate number of women that work part-time is actually on top of that. But hand-in-hand with the difference in pay, there's also a difference in representation. We spoke to Claire Mason of Man Bites Dog about what she's calling a gender say gap, and what B2B copywriters of all genders can do about it. So we are joined now by Claire Mason, who is CEO at Man Bites Dog. Thanks for joining us, Claire.
My pleasure.
And Man Bites Dog, you're a global thought leadership consultancy. I think I might need that explaining, if that's okay.
Of course. Yeah, I think people often wonder about the name. You might have heard it. It's the definition of news. Dog bites man happens all the time. Man bites dog's a story. It's remarkable, it's memorable, and it's worth sharing. And that, in a nutshell, is what we do for our clients. We generate big ideas and we make them travel to position our clients as global thought leaders. So we call ourselves the Strategic Ideas Company because we develop these big ideas that really help our major global clients grow their businesses.
And is that working in sort of both B2B and B2C, or is it sort of...
No, we are absolutely B2B. And actually, the business came about because I really saw an opportunity in the growth of the knowledge economy to really build a business that specialised in strategic marketing for services companies, because it's really difficult to market the intangible. So if you're a professional services firm, a financial firm, or even an IT services firm, you can't see and touch what you do. It's all about selling your thinking and your ideas. And so that's why I founded Man Bites Dog, to help those companies that are invisible really build their profile and really set themselves apart through big thinking.
The thing in particular that we'd like to chat to you about is we've seen a number of articles and videos from you lately talking about a thing called a gender say gap, which seems really interesting. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Absolutely. So the gender say gap was really born from the realisation that the gender pay gap and all of the other major movements that we've seen in the last year, from the anniversary of Me Too to finally seeing a statue of a woman join the 11 men in Parliament Square, it was really born of the realisation that the gender pay gap is just a symptom of something much bigger and more important, which we're calling the gender say gap. And what we mean by that is the absence of women and other diverse groups from every walk of business and public life. We're just not hearing from female authorities in newsrooms, boardrooms, and even in the movies, we have fewer lines. So to me, it's really important that we close this gap in female representation and obviously the representation of other diverse groups.
It's really interesting, Claire, because I mean, literally just before coming on this podcast, I saw something on Twitter and it was some stats about how women are represented on BBC One and BBC Two programmes. And it was talking specifically about women over 55 are only 18% of the women represented on BBC, even though like they're 31% of the general female population. And that's often where you get the expertise and the authorities, you know, when you've had a career and you've built up that knowledge, and they're just not being represented on TV. So, yes, it's definitely a problem.
And I think you're absolutely right. And when you look at news media, for example, women write just a third of the news. So we're already underrepresented. We feature in just a quarter of all news coverage. And if you look at business news, that drops to 10%. So even though we are succeeding and we are present, we are just not seen. We are not seen and heard in our society. And this actually fails to reflect our status, because it has now been a whole decade since women were actually disproportionately the experts in the room. We're more likely to work in high status professions. We're more likely to have a university degree. And yet when it comes to us being experts in the boardroom or in the media, we are practically invisible.
So why would this matter in particular in B2B content that we're seeing, and what should marketers and copywriters be doing about it?
So if we look at the invisibility of women, this is particularly pronounced in business and even more so in technology. So to give an example, 8 out of 10 high school children can't name a famous woman working in technology. Is that because we don't exist or because of the gender say gap? And so I think as B2B experts, we have a responsibility to really change the face of these professions so that the next generation can aspire to be part of them. So to give an example, there's a heartbreaking project that's recently been done called Drawing the Future, where they ask children to draw what they wanted to be when they grew up. And until the age of 7, there was no gendering of those choices. But as soon as little girls get to 7, they start to have gendered ideas of what's possible. And you don't see them dreaming of being a scientist or an astronaut anymore. Whereas 4 times as many boys were dreaming of STEM professions at that age. Now, my niece is currently 6, and when she grows up, she wants to be Ada Twist scientist. And I really think that B2B marketers and B2B copywriters have a responsibility to keep that dream alive, or at least not kill it. Because if she can't see those role models, we're really not going to be able to make a change in those professions. So just yesterday, the British Computer Society announced that women make up, we make up just 17% of the technology workforce. That's just such a drop in the ocean. And yet we're facing a huge STEM skill shortage in this country. We've actually done a really interesting project of research with Korn Ferry, which projects that by 2030 in TMT in the UK, there will be 200,000 unfilled technology jobs, which is equivalent to wiping £28 billion in annual GDP off the UK's economic performance. So don't do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it because it's in the long-term interests of society and your clients to actually make sure they have the workforce of the future. So I think it really matters. We have a huge influence over the faces, the voices, and the ideas that we're putting forward on behalf of organisations. And so I think B2B copywriters and B2B marketers can make a huge difference by showing those more diverse faces, voices, and ideas so that the next generation can see what's possible for them.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And, you know, if we think about what practically can we do, I think that as copywriters, you know, some of us might feel sort of experienced enough or maybe bold enough to push back on clients and say, can I speak to a female expert? Can I speak to a woman about this? Or, you know, often when we're writing, we're coming up with sort of theoretical personas, or like we're talking about what a CIO thinks or what a CTO thinks. And often there's a temptation to just say he, you know, and then I think it's just being really conscious that is not necessarily a man, and that, you know, we can use she to refer to a CTO or CIO. And I think that's something that we should be more conscious of bringing into our writing, I think.
I completely agree with that. I think the idea of setting bold goals for the diversity of the content that you're producing and letting your clients know that you want to reflect the demographics of their workforce and you want to reflect the demographics of their customer base because it's in their interest to do so. Another area where B2B copywriters could make a huge difference is actually looking at your influence and what illustrates your articles. So actually, if you look at if you try and have more influence over, for example, the stock photography that goes with your writing, there's always this kind of unholy trinity of kind of like a white man, a black man, and an Asian woman. And the hierarchy of these people are put in a certain hierarchy, and it's always the white man in the centre, or the white man holding a pen, or the white man holding the architectural plans. And it's just being aware of that, of where the power's sitting in that stock photography as well. And actually something that might be seen as being positively diverse actually still has that underlying message of the man as standard, and it's just looking out for those things. And often, again, age denotes status, so you may have the woman in the room maybe the youngest, which is quite interesting, but very rarely holding the pen or the computer or the plans. Also, minding your language. I think we need to be aware of this message that men are the gold standard or the norm. A man called Douglas Hofstadter did a really interesting experiment where he tests out copy by replacing the word man with the word white. So chairman becomes chair white, manpower becomes white power. And it's just a really good way of testing if your content is in some way biased. And it's quite horrific when you see it in those terms. And I have a friend who's she's a Jewish rights campaigner, and she gets extremely frustrated by the level of misogyny in everyday society that we just don't notice because it's the wallpaper all around us. And she does a similar thing. She said, you know, if I think something might be misogynist, I just replace the word for woman with the word Jew. And if it's offensive to me then it's offensive in the first place. So I thought these are actually really good techniques for just checking our own bias when we're actually writing copy. And I'm so aware as well, in even in my company name, you know, Man Bites Dog, it's again, it's using man as the generic, which is why my Twitter handle is @WomanBitesDog. But it's just being aware of these things and trying not to normalise them. For example, the BBC still uses the term businessman when they mean business person so often. And I think it would be great if brands and broadcasters could provide guidance for people to say, actually, do we always need to use the word businessman or weatherman?
And The Economist does that too. So, yes, I see that a lot.
I will add them to my hit list of people to ask not to do that.
There you go.
Was there anything in particular Was there a particular moment that that prompted you to really want to speak out on this, Claire? Is there something that that grabbed you and said, right, now's the moment I'm going to do something?
I think for me, it's the... What's really interesting is that as women, we have not yet achieved boardroom parity, but we are really present at the next level down, and we are disproportionately the experts in society. And what I notice every day is our absence, and it's a curious thing. And for me, I was so horrified by the gender pay gap, and that just really sent me on a bit of a journey to say, actually, what's behind this? And actually, is the gap in our representation, what is that what's driving the gap in our compensation as well? And it really matters, because we want change in society, we want more equality, and we really need the next generation to see what's possible and to see what futures are open to them. So I think it's so critical that we make a change. If you think about the fact that it's 100 years since at least some women were given the vote in this country, we are quite far from equality. And I think because as marketers and copywriters, we represent and reflect our society, we also help our society imagine what it could be in the future. And I think by presenting that more diverse picture, it's going to have a positive impact.
Absolutely. And I saw a speech that you gave in the House of Commons. And in that, you encouraged women in particular to put themselves forward and to be more forthcoming, to speak up on things. Is the onus in particular on women to speak up, or are there things that, you know, as a guy who, you know, would hopefully consider himself an ally, that I could do to help the process too?
I think it's definitely a two-way street, and I think men can have a tremendous influence here. I've seen initiatives like, for example, the 30% Club has a cross-company mentoring scheme, and actually most of the mentors on that scheme are male, and they are absolutely fantastic. I was lucky enough to be mentored by the CEO of BT Global Services, and the impact of that is immense. So I think men are in those powerful positions, and by sponsoring and mentoring women to get to the next level, you can make a huge difference. And you're also a gatekeeper. So David, in your case, you're a gatekeeper to the content you're producing. You can influence your clients and their choices. And I think just by saying to people, hang on, I don't want to be part of this, it's a mannel, can we bring more diversity here? So for example, the Mayor of London, I've heard, Sadiq Khan, won't join a non-diverse panel anymore, which is great to know. And I think people are becoming more aware of these things. So I think just raising this issue, men can make a huge difference. And I think organisations, what we're asking them to do is to audit their gender say gap when they audit their gender pay gap. So they can measure the diversity of their thinkers and speakers and compare that with the demographics of their workforce and the demographics of their geography and the demographics of their customer base, and really set bold goals to be more equal in their representation. I think one of the causes behind it is that corporates often assume that it's got to be the board or it's got to be the CEO that comments on something. And yes, when it comes to financial results, that's the case. But actually, when you're looking for a subject matter expert, it's the level below. And at that level, the female spokespeople are plentiful. So we don't have an issue of access. What we have an issue of is a sort of an invisibility issue. So in order to make change, we're really calling on women to put their hands up and volunteer to be thinkers and speakers for their organisations, and to see it really as a key part of their career progression and their personal development. And it is uncomfortable. I spent a lot of time interviewing women about, is there a reluctance in us to do this and why? And I think we do tend to have a sort of a self-censoring perfectionism, if I can put it like that. That's certainly been my own experience. But I do think there is a lot you can do to build that confidence. So, for example, for the House of Commons speech, I did a stand-up comedy course. I did a fantastic course called The Leader's Voice, which really helped me build my confidence. And I also went and stood on a wobbly ladder at Speaker's Corner in gale force winds in the pouring rain and had about 50 men heckle me for half an hour, which was a kind of terrifying experience, but nothing could ever be as confrontational as that experience. And so after that, anything felt quite easy. So I highly recommend Speaker's Corner. It was actually a really joyful experience by the end, and I think it's a great way of building confidence. And the funny thing is, when you are actually criticised to your face, you kind of realise that your own inner critic is far worse than anything anybody else can say to you. So I would highly recommend that as a way of facing the fear and doing it anyway.
Absolutely, I think that's fantastic. And actually, Claire, you're the second person I've spoken to this week, second woman I've spoken to this week, who said that they've gone on a stand-up comedy course to try to conquer their fear of public speaking. So that does sound like a really good way into it, if that's something that makes you nervous. And I know I also have found it very difficult to kind of conquer that fear and start, you know, accepting invitations to speak and actually thinking, yes, I am good enough, and yes, I do know enough, and I have got information and expertise to share with people. I don't think it's something that comes naturally to a lot of us. So yes, you're not alone, and I'm not alone, I don't think, in that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I found people like Funny Women, who actually look after real stand-ups. That's, it's a fantastic organisation that does some brilliant training on using the techniques of stand-up comedy to really help you build your confidence. And I agree with you. I think, generally speaking, and it's not great to talk in general terms, I know, but women aren't glory seekers. We are grafters. But I think we need to start seeing getting our message out there as being a really important part of that graft, and seeing it as our responsibility to be visible leaders so that the next generation can see what's possible for them.
And so many thanks again to Claire for talking with us. It's an issue where B2B copywriters and marketers can make an immediate difference. And there were some excellent tips, I think, from Claire during that interview on how we can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Although the thing is that it's probably worth addressing is I can hear the listener talking back to their podcast player saying, yeah, that's all very well in theory, but it's not going to fly with my client or my stakeholder, because they're set in their ways. They have an idea of how they like things done and who their audience is. How practical do you think it is for us to actually push back in this area?
To as push back writers? and sort of ask to speak to a female expert rather than a man, or for if we're talking about a theoretical persona in the content, to make that a female persona. I think we should be pushing back, and even if the client is quite set in their ways. I mean, what we're seeing now is that companies are really striving for diversity, and the more diverse they can show themselves to be, the better reputation they have, the more attractive they are to sort of new generation of talent. It's part of their responsibility, I think, to kind of show that the diversity of talent and expertise they've got within their organisation. And I think we can help them do that. And I think it's a point worth making.
And alongside that kind of ethical and reputational case, can we build a business case around that for how that might make their content more effective?
Absolutely, because I think, a lot of companies assume that their audience is male. I mean, especially in B2B tech, there's an assumption that their audience is male. And so you kind of, I mean, even I as a woman, like, fall into, if you're giving an example, you go, oh, the IT guy, the CIO, he thinks this. Yeah. And you have to stop yourself, because you know that's not true. You know, when you actually look at who's out there and who is in these roles, they are becoming more equal. And if not, there's more women in the roles than there are men in those roles. I mean, I was writing something the other week that was specifically written for procurement category managers. Now, this is not a persona that I've ever written for before. Uh-huh. My default is always, the default bit of my brain thinks, these are men that I'm writing for, because it's business. It's a terrible thing to think, but that's where my default goes. So I thought, I'll look on LinkedIn, I'll look at some people that are in this job, and they were almost all women, like really smart women with business degrees. And I thought, wow, that if I'd have just sat down to write that blog without looking at that, that's not who I would have imagined the audience to be. So, So, yeah, from a business point of view, you need to know who you're writing for, not just have an idea in your head of who it might be. You need to know exactly who's in those roles.
And so when you think about those audience personas and the people that are in those roles, is it a question of writing differently for a man than we would for a female reader? Or is it just more about aligning things like pronouns so that they're not excluding people?
I think it's that. I mean, I mean, you asked the question on Twitter, I think. You know, do you write differently when you feel like you're writing for a woman than when you're writing for a man?
And everybody ran screaming away from the question. Adam Greener said that he'd asked the same question on LinkedIn. Yeah. And similarly, I think people were just like, yeah, I'm not touching that one with a barge pole.
Well, yeah, and I think I actually answered your question on Twitter, which is that I don't write differently. You're right. It's using those pronouns and it's using those examples. If you're quoting somebody, or if you're even like using a hypothetical persona, then you know you just stop and think. You know. You can make this person female and that will resonate with this audience just as much as, you know, if you've made it a male person, or if not more.
Sure. And I mean, the world is changing in so many ways and for the better, you know, at the moment. And I mean, the other thing with the pronoun stuff is it's not just that you don't want to exclude women, right? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, that in tech there are more women working in tech, more high profile women working in tech, more female decision makers than there have ever been, and that's great. But you know, but there's a whole spectrum of genders now that we're gonna see increasingly represented among our readers and our audiences as B2B copywriters. It's about including them as well, right?
Absolutely. And so this is, I mean, I have to say, you know, I'm, 48? And, you know, this is, you know, it's taken such a long time for us to come to terms with the fact that it's not just a man's world. You know, we're not just writing for men, but we're writing for women as well. And now, you know, we've got to consider the whole kind of spectrum, and how is that going to change our writing? You know, what pronouns should we be using now? And I think, you know, that's not even really in our field established, you know. So that's an interesting challenge that we're going to have to be looking at.
Yeah, and it's just one of the things that feels really good that we have an opportunity to do as copywriters is to steer our clients in the way of what best practice looks like in that area.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for the whole of last year, the moment at work that gave me the most joy was the bit where I updated a client's editorial style guide to say that pronouns should not be male by default, and that gender neutral pronouns should be used by default, and just not to assume that they're writing for a man, and to actually put that into the writing standards that we're going to be using for them in all their copy from now on. I mean, that made me, it gave me such a glow. It felt like I was actually making a positive difference in the world in a really small way, but we don't often get the chance to do that as copywriters, particularly in B2B. But this is something where I felt like it had made a difference.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely brilliant. And that is something that you can now take and recommend. Ooh, we can all now take and recommend to other clients as well. And yeah, I mean, I do think that there is a way to go, because, you know, as Claire was talking about, as we were talking about in the interview with Claire, you know, certain very high-profile media outlets still talk about businessmen, you know, and haven't even acknowledged yet that some may be female, you know, and so there is quite a long way. There is quite a long way to go, but things like that will definitely make a difference.
It's moving in the right direction, yeah. I think. Yeah. What else can we practically be doing to make an impact in this area?
So definitely think about the pronouns that you're using when you're writing about people in the content. Definitely know your audience. Don't just assume you know who the audience is. So it's quite easy now to do some research on LinkedIn and find out, you know, what type of people are actually in these jobs that you're writing for. Look out, I think, in client briefs and, you know, when you're writing client materials, like, is there a kind of is one gender disproportionately represented in this, and how can we even that out? And then if it's appropriate, go back to the client and like with some suggestions for how we can even this out and why it's a good idea to even it out.
Absolutely, because this stuff doesn't just happen by accident, unfortunately. I mean, would that it did. But it does take a definite act of will make sure that this stuff is even.
It does take a conscious effort. And it's a bit odd because when it does take a conscious effort, it almost feels like it's wrong. Mm. It almost feels like you're going against your instinct, but it's not wrong. It's absolutely the right thing to do. And you're kind of going against decades of ingrained history, but it needs to be done until it becomes like not a conscious effort anymore, until it becomes just second nature.
And unbelievably, that's it. We're out of time again for this month already. But this is clearly a really important issue. So we very much want to hear your experiences, especially if you're one of the brilliant copywriters in B2B that doesn't identify as male. Email us at podcast@radix-communications.com or send us a voice memo or find us on Twitter at radixcom. Until next time, remember, free your mind and your pronouns will follow. Bye.
Bye.